to GovX Data Points, where we talk all things government and data. I'm your co-host, Eric Ries. Thanks for joining us this episode as we focus not on cities, but counties.
How surprising. This is Sharon Paley, and we're pleased to welcome you this week, along with our special guests, Natalie Ortiz and Kathy Rowings of the National Association of Counties, or NACO, to hear all about what counties are up to in terms of data. And we'll be talking to NACO specifically about the counties they work with across the United States and hear lots of the examples that they have to share.
We're also going to talk with Kathy and Natalie about the work of NACO connecting counties to each other and how they use data themselves to advance better outcomes across all sorts of counties, from urban to rural and everywhere in between.
So without further ado, let's turn to the interview. Natalie and Kathy, thanks so much for joining us today. Let's just start with a really basic question, which is, how did you get started working with counties and in particular counties and data together?
Sure. So I guess the best place to start is by talking about NACO, the National Association of Counties, to begin with. We're the only organization in the country that represents the 3,069 county governments. We specialize in counties, from not only being the go-to on what county governments look like across the country, obviously lots of variation. We have a saying around here, if you've seen one county, you've seen one county. But we're also the trusted source of information on best practices to solve problems facing county government leaders. Counties are involved in everything from agriculture to telecommunications, infrastructure, public health, healthcare, justice, public safety. Basically, you name the domestic policy area and counties are there and NACO is right there alongside them. So with that, we started talking about data in more of a research kind of capacity to begin with, particularly with jail populations. And as I said, the role of counties and public safety really comes through the role that they play in operating jails. They are the operator of over 90% of the jails that are in the U.S. And jails and public safety really account for one of the largest shares of county government budgets. And in fact, it's one of the largest cost drivers. Counties saw rising costs between 2007 and 2013, which, as we know, is the Great Recession. So when counties weren't bringing in a lot of money, there was certainly a lot of money going out to operate jails and operate the system that protects public safety. So when we started talking about data, we were really looking at, you know, how can we reduce jail populations safely? And part of that is coming from who's in jail and why are they there and how long are they there for? And using data to help understand the magnitude of the problem, the dimensions of the problem, and then go from there with, okay, how can we reduce the jail population?
Yeah, that's really helpful background. And I'm curious, Kathy, you know, and Natalie both, do you have a specific background that would, you know, be more interested in public safety, for example? And how does the work that you all do at public safety and data manifest itself through NACO at this point in time? So kind of two questions, both the history of you all and why you're interested in this topic, but also what that's looking like now in your work at NACO.
Sure. So I can start. My research actually is in research, and I came from academia and kind of took this broad interest in how do we use data and analytics to transform public policy and to make government better. And so part of the way to really have an impact in doing that, from not just, you know, doing research studies and collecting data and analyzing the data and getting it published in a peer-reviewed journal, but working with the county leaders and the other government leaders that are actually doing the things that you hope to change and doing the things that you hope to impact. So for me, it was a kind of a natural segue from my research background into the work that we are doing here at NACO.
And this is Kathy, and I came at it from sort of how Natalie came at it, from a research background. I have more of a legal background. I went to law school. I'm not a lawyer anymore, though. I'm a recovering lawyer. And I was really interested coming out of law school in thinking about finding a position or sort of an opportunity to work both on sort of larger policy issues, larger justice system, systemic related issues, but also working with sort of the non-justice involved equivalent of clients. And so NACO has actually been a really great fit for that, in that we are working every day, talking to every day county elected officials, their staff, whether they're in the court system or working in the jail, or they work in the sheriff's office or the public defender's office, or the district attorneys, the folks that are really on the ground actually implementing the policies that NACO highlights and NACO recommends and other counties are implementing to sort of really get a sense of what works and what doesn't. And so we get a great opportunity to sort of live in both of those worlds and think through both of those lenses, how to best improve the functioning of local justice systems.
Can you talk to us a little bit more, Kathy, about when you talk about what works and what doesn't, can you give us an example of in practice what county data use is like for you all?
I might kick that over to Natalie. She's definitely our data guru. But in sort of more broadly, I think that what is sort of important to point out, and this gets back to what Natalie was saying earlier, giving the sort of NACO overview, is that county leaders and their staff are really the folks who are on the ground. They are close to the people that they're serving, and they're really focused on providing those services in the most effective way, the most efficient way, the fairest way, possible. And so one of the ways that counties make sure that they are really doing these things as effectively and efficiently as they can is to look at the results, look at the numbers, look at the data to get real answers about what you're doing. And what, you know, Natalie said, the sort of magnitude and the scope of what's going on in your community and what you're doing and the impact you're having. And so counties across the country are realizing this and, you know, sort of looking to NACO and also looking to learn from their peers across the country about how they actually can sort of best use the data that they have, figure out what data they might be lacking, but that would be really helpful for them. And then to how to just use all that information to continually enhance their systems and improve people's lives, really. So that's sort of, I think, a good broad overview of ways counties are using data. But Natalie, I don't want to put her on the spot, but could probably give a nice specific example.
So I think one of the ways that we really see kind of the, let me back up and start all over again. One of the challenges for counties is trying to figure out what data they should be collecting or how they kind of understand a problem and how data can help them kind of better understand the nuance of it. One of the examples that I think we see kind of regularly is this issue around people in jail who are there because they cannot afford their bail bond. Basically, they're a certain amount of money has been set, and because they can't pay for that, they're in jail. And so as counties start to analyze their jail population, analyze why people are in, when those people are released, the reason that they were in there to begin with, the fact that it was because they couldn't afford that bail bond is lost in their system. Understand why people are there and understand the monetary aspect of it, some of that information gets lost. And so our goal is to help work with them to understand why having that information is important, collecting that information, retaining that information, making that part of their information management system and their overall approach so that they can have a better grasp on kind of what the driver of the jail population is and what specific part of why someone there, what that specific thing is. So I think that's a concrete example. I hope I did it's kind of going into some of the specific dimensions that comes with managing a jail population. And as we at NACO work at kind of a national level to understand all of the different issues facing local jails, working with counties to bring that information down and help them apply it through their own processes of jail population management.
Yeah, I think that's a really helpful example. And often in our work at GovX, we're working with all kinds of governments, but mainly with cities. And I'm interested in hearing thoughts from both of you on the kind of issues you're talking about problem literacy leading to, you know, figuring out data to help solve problems. So how have you, I really like the example that you gave, Natalie. Are there other examples in your work where that approach has been prominent? And in particular, I'm very interested in what you all think of how cities and counties can better work together with the end goal, as you both said, of serving residents better.
Yeah, so I'll start with the first part of your question and just kind of what we've been seeing in counties. And I'll talk specifically about one of the projects NACO's been working on in partnership with the Laura and John Arnold Foundation on the Data-Driven Justice Initiative, which is to help counties and cities and states identify who the frequent utilizers of their jails and crisis service systems are. So these are, when we say frequent utilizers, these are people who are coming into the jail, into the homeless shelters, into emergency rooms, might be the subject of crisis calls coming into the 911 center. So despite the fact that all of these people are coming into contact with all of these services, they continue to come into contact with all of these services. And part of that is because when we look at that frequent utilizer populations, we're able to see that they have mental illnesses, substance abuse disorders. If they're coming into contact with the homeless shelter, that there is a housing issue there. So how do we identify who those folks are by sharing data across systems? And then at the same time, once we are able to identify them, how do we then deploy interventions so that we break that cycle of frequent utilization? So there's a lot in that initiative and in these efforts to use data and to help counties kind of understand, okay, are you trying to reduce the use of law enforcement to these 911 calls involving people who are having a behavioral health crisis? Are you trying to reduce the number of people who are in jail that have chronic homelessness? So how does the problem that you're looking to address relate to the data that you're trying to use? A lot of times when people will hear the Data-Driven Justice Initiative is trying to identify frequent utilizers, they think they have to aggregate this information from all of these different systems. And if they're not using all of that system information, then they're not doing things the correct way or the right way. And I'm using air quotes around that. And really it's working with counties and other jurisdictions that participate in the initiative to use the data that's going to be representative of their problem and what they're trying to address. And so at the same time that we're trying to do that, I think the Data-Driven Justice Initiative is just one use case where we can talk about data sharing and system collaboration and really do like the systems change that is going to better use resources and hopefully through research and evaluation demonstrate that we're able to impact people and improve lives, which is really getting at kind of the heart of what, you know, county government is really trying to do, and that's, you know, create healthy, vibrant, safe places. So in the Data-Driven Justice Initiative, really trying to work through what the processes are to get people to talk, to develop a language, to share a language, to share data, and to kind of use each other and form those relationships that are going to bring alignment across systems. So that, you know, and I think too, as we leverage those processes that we're setting up counties for success in the future when it comes to using data and analytics and in whatever problem they're trying to solve, especially as we take kind of a more holistic view of problems and realize that it's not just a one system's problems, but it's a community's problem. So how do we rally a community around that, around it? I think to your next question about, you know, how can cities and counties work better together? I think the Data-Driven Justice Initiative is a pretty narrow application of this kind of cross-jurisdiction collaboration, especially when we look at the role that law enforcement might have in it. It's, you know, there are way more municipal police departments out there than there are sheriff departments. So there's definitely a role that cities can be playing. And so I think the one of the better ways to do it is to start small, identify a really narrow project or a really narrow priority area, leverage your community groups to tell you what it is that they need or what problem that they're hoping that government can solve for them, and go through that process of working together to figure out what works, what doesn't, and then refine and improve from there. But it's really taking that risk, but at least taking it in a calculated way, in a way that your community is behind you, and in something that's really kind of narrow and specific, so that you can learn through that process.
I would just jump in. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Kathy.
I was just going to sort of highlight something Natalie said, which is that these are community problems. It's not a county problem. It's not a city problem. It's a problem that is impacting residents, and residents are residents generally of a city and a county, right? So it's really important that those two sort of governmental entities work together as much as they can, as often as they can, to address these sort of shared challenges. And a good, I think, sort of specific example of that that I would highlight is something that we're hearing a lot more about from our members, sort of an increased level of interest about, is what are called sort of triage centers or stabilization centers or crisis centers. You know, they go by any number of names, but it's really the idea that there should be a safe alternative to take an individual who is in a behavioral health crisis that's not the jail and it's not the emergency room. So, these tend to be built to, or opened, or enhanced to, like I said, sort of reduce either a jail population or the use of emergency room hospital services, and connect people to services. But it's a really good example of what Natalie was saying about the sort of prevalence of police versus county-run law enforcement, and then the county services that actually impact the people that the police are bringing to a center. So it's just sort of being really thoughtful about connections like that. So the city function and the police bringing these individuals to a crisis center, what are sort of their priorities and what's the benefit to them of bringing individuals to a center like that? In many cases, the successful triage centers that we've seen have set up a process that makes it very quick for police to drop an individual off. So it's easier for them. It takes less time for them to drop someone in this safe place, and then they can get back out on the street doing investigations, doing patrolling. That's really the point of that police force. And then the sort of county priority, county benefit of having a triage center like that is, again, the sort of the reduction in jail populations that tends to occur. So just want, you know, sort of emphasizing that there are shared priorities, there are shared challenges, there are shared opportunities, and bringing folks together as early and often as possible to start talking through where those, you know, sort of easy, small connections to start with are, tends to be the most effective way to start to build those city-county collaborations that are so critical.
Yeah, I think that's really great practical advice for dealing with very large, complicated questions, but good ideas about where to get started. If you had one piece of advice for our listeners about using data in their own work, what would you each say to that?
Natalie, do you want to go first?
You're the data.
Yeah, I'll go first. So I think the one piece of advice that I have for listeners on using data is share your successes, and just the same, share your failures. There is a lot of appetite out there for how data is being used to drive decision-making, how data is improving government efficiency, how data sharing is saving money, improving outcomes. There's such an appetite out there in local government, whether it's city, whether it's county, even state, even federal, definitely, to know how data is being used. And the only way that we're going to get that sort of information is if you share it. And I think NACO provides a great platform for that, not only to share, but then to help educate others in government on how it's being used or what the opportunities are, what the roles, what the challenges are, just the same. I think another really important thing that kind of gets lost in our conversation about data use in government is inviting the media, inviting the public to understand how you're using it as well. We are, I think, seeing an increasing uncertainty in the public around information sharing and data sharing and how my information is being used. And that's at an individual level, and that's certainly understandable. The issues that we're talking about with behavioral health and jails, I mean, certainly kind of can get people in the community fired up and concerned about, you know, how that information is being used. But I think it's important to socialize your residents on how information is being used to create better places, how it's being used to help people, how it's being used to improve lives. And so I think that there's a lot to be said for inviting in media, using your social media accounts, making Facebook posts that adds a level of transparency, but also at the same time is telling the story about how government is doing good things for its residents.
And I would add, I think oftentimes when people start talking about using data and thinking about using data and sharing data, it feels like this super complicated, like intractable problem that if you're not a data expert or a researcher or have some sort of statistical analysis background, that you just, there's just no way to even possibly figure out how to do this well. And we would say, that's not true. Like, you need to start somewhere. Everyone can start doing this. Everyone can start looking at their data with what they have now. You don't necessarily need fancy software. You don't need a data warehouse or a fancy algorithm, right? Like, this stuff can be done using your records in Excel, or if your records are still on paper. It might take you a little bit longer, but this sort of data collection and analysis can be done no matter where you are. So I think for us, one of the key pieces of advice is to just start. Everyone had to start somewhere. So whether it's finding two programs within your county or your community that already work well together and have a good working relationship, maybe see if you can start there to start sharing data. Maybe there is an issue that one of your leaders is particularly interested in. Start thinking about where an easy first point to start would be, because then you can have a success that Natalie talked about, right? Sharing your successes is so important. And then that offers you the opportunity to build from. There's never going to be a perfect time to start any of this. So just starting small, showing that it works, you can show that there are benefits to sharing data, that it actually can be done. It's not this terrible, complicated process, and that it improves outcomes, and then build from there. And that's sort of, you just have to take the first step to get this process going, and it does not need to be a huge endeavor.
Great. Well, I think that's great advice for us and for the folks that are listening, and we really appreciate you both taking the time to talk today, and we look forward to more city and county discussions going forward, in particular when it comes to data and serving people. So thanks to both of you.
Thanks for listening this week as we talk with Kathy and Natalie from NACO. If you want to learn more about the work they're doing with counties and data in general, check out the show notes for some links.
And if you like what you heard on this week's podcast or any week's podcast, please be sure to leave us a review in iTunes or Google Play or wherever you are listening to this podcast. And also be sure to follow GovX on both Twitter and Instagram at GOV_EX. Thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you next time when we find out where the data points.